Nerds, you're listening to an episode on the Nerdcore podcast feed. If you're feeling generous, please consider pledging to a tier on our Patreon at patreon.com/thenerdcore. We have tiers as low as $1 per month. Thanks so much, and enjoy the episode!
Nerdcore Podcast, the podcast reviews the movies and talks that nerd shit. This is episode 274, and it is your third review of Foreign Language Film Month. Yeah, the third review in the month. And it is your nerd. You're going to hear us host the show alongside my wonderful co-host, Young Yoda.
Hi, everybody. I'm here because I was promised boob reviews.
No, that's not what we were promised.
You promised.
Well, we're recording this on Monday, which is the 16th, so a happy belated Mexican Independence Day to everybody listening, from our listeners in Mexico to our listeners who are descendants of those in Mexico, and they live in the old Mexican territories, and whatever. And we love you all. We hope everybody had a safe time and we had a good time. Brad, you are an honorary Latino after all. I hope you had a good Mexican Independence Day.
Hey, thank you. I spent it all day working, so.
Hey, we're hardworking people, Brad.
Yes, indeed. So that's the norm.
Exactly. Yeah. So today's gonna be a pretty good review. Today we're going to be talking about François Truffaut's The 400 Blows. But before we get to that, Brad, how are you doing today?
I am slightly tired, but I'm here. I'm good. I'm in a positive place. And I'm ready to talk about this movie.
Yeah. We are bonjour. We are going to be... bonjour, monsieur.
Oui, oui, pipi.
Yeah, bonjour, monsieur. Today we are going to be talking about a French film. And we're going back all the way to 1959, baby. To the height and the start of the French New Wave.
So you know what that means.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.
Yeah, we can talk about this movie with all freedom because guess what?
Everyone dies. Just kidding.
Just kidding. Yeah, don't tell them that. So, The 400 Blows, or in French, as I'm not about to read that because I don't know French, is a 1959 French New Wave drama film and the directorial debut of François Truffaut. The film, shot in Dailyscope, stars Jean-Pierre Lude, Albert Remy. Remy, I don't know, and Claire Maurier. One of the defining films of the French New Wave, it displays many of the characteristic traits of the movement, written by Truffaut and Marcel Mauzy. The film is about Antoine Doinel, a misunderstood adolescent in Paris who struggles with his parents and teachers due to his rebellious behavior. Filmed on location in Paris and Honfleur, it is the first of the series of five films in which Leoud plays the semi-autobiographical character. The 400 Blows received numerous awards nominations, including the Cannes Film Festival Award for Best Director, the OCIC Award, and a Palme d'Or nomination in 1959. It was also nominated for an Academy Award for Best Writing in 1960. The film had a 4.1 million admissions in France, making it Truffaut's most successful film in his home country. The 400 Blows is widely considered one of the best French films in the history of cinema. In the 2012 Sight and Sound Critics Poll of the greatest films ever made, it was ranked 39th. All right, and I need to go ahead and introduce you all to the movement of the French New Wave. This is a movement that I covered a little bit in my French cinema class. We didn't really talk a lot in depth. We didn't go into like a lot of it, but we did talk about it. So, this was during the late 50s to the late 60s, and it consisted of notable filmmakers such as Agnès Varda, Alain Resnais, André Bazin, Jean-Luc Godard, Jacques Demy, François Truffaut, Éric Rohmer, Claude Chabrol, and Jacques Rivet. And it's influenced by Italian neorealism, film noir, classic Hollywood cinema, poetic realism, auteur theory, Parisian cinephile culture, existentialism, Alfred Hitchcock, and the art film genre. And So it also did influence a lot of the filmmaking we see now. The LA Rebellion movement, New Hollywood, which was the period after, well, basically the period of the 70s onwards, which saw, you know, the arrival of filmmakers such as Martin Scorsese and Quentin Tarantino as well in the 90s. So if for those of you who do not know about, you know, how much the French New Wave influenced Quentin Tarantino, that shot where in Pulp Fiction with John Travolta and Uma Thurman in the car, that is directly shot by shot taken from Jean-Luc Godard's Breathless. It influenced New German Cinema, Cinema Novo, Dogma 95. Dogma 95, which was a big movement in Denmark, and British New Wave films. So it's, I can't really explain to you too much, man, but it's a big movement, and a lot of it was shot in on location, just like Italian neorealism. But it's not because they didn't have the money to make the films. Really, it was because they thought that the studio and really the fantastical way of storytelling takes away from the actual narrative of the film. So they wanted to make it as real as possible and have it be rooted in realism. So the suspension of disbelief was taking away from the fact of you know, from the language of cinema. They believe that to be the case. It's a really interesting period. Of course, this is not the last time we're going to talk about this filmmaker. We're going to talk a lot more about this guy, about a lot of these directors, actually. And it's a lot of it has influenced a lot of the work we see today. I mean, a lot of it is seen in the films of Damien Chazelle, especially La La Land. That's a lot of French New Wave influences in there. But this is one of the most defining films of the movement, and it's a big, big one because it's regarded as one of the best movies of all time. Akira Kurosawa says this is one of his favorite movies of all time, says it's a beautiful movie. And with that being said, let's go ahead and just get into it, man. What were your thoughts on The 400 Blows?
Why am I going to go first again?
Oh, you know, it's my movie. I'm so sorry. So me being the film student I am, I knew about this movie. I never watched it. I've always seen,
was
like,
your first watch?
Yes. I've seen clips here and there, but I've never watched. I had watched the final scene before, because it's such a legendary scene. Like, it's regarded as one of the best closers. So I had never watched this film before. I knew what it was about. I knew that it was closely related to Truffaut's life. Especially because I had done a lot of research on Truffaut, because he's such an interesting figure, and also he died really young. And I will say this, that I really, really like this movie. For this being Truffaut's first film, like, it's incredible what he was able to do with an hour and 40 minutes. Because this story really isn't, you know, it's about a kid who's trying to find his way. But it's also taking you on a journey of Paris. Brad?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I get Kurosawa vibes from this.
Oh, yeah.
Just the techniques with lighting, especially the one where he's riding in the back of the police van, and you see a single tear kind of come down, and you just see the lighting from the street lights just over his face. It's just like, this is so Kurosawa.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing technique throughout this film. I did think parts of it were a little slow. I mean, in one or two places, it wasn't horribly slow. It wasn't like Seven Samurai. Oh my God, it's 3 hours, 30 minutes long. Yeah. No, it just felt like the scene went on just slightly too long. And then it went right back into the new scene. So
Are you talking about the scene with the psychologist?
Scene with the psychologist? No, I actually like that scene. Mm. It was more, I think, like when he's just kind of roaming around Paris.
Yeah, I think that's just Truffaut taking you around Paris, because it's just the way that the movement really wanted you to see Paris at the time and see this new form of life that was, you know, coming off the war.
And I can understand that, but it just, you know, it took you right out of where he had come from, like, he just got into a fight with his parents. So, and then now he's roaming around the streets of Paris because he ran away, which I guess mean running away in Paris means like hanging out with your friend for a day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but the movie overall, great cinematography. I'm kind of surprised this is a debut. I wouldn't think this being a debut. I would think this would be made by someone with quite the career already.
Mm-hmm.
But for being a debut, that's fantastic.
Yeah, a lot of the directors of this movement, they were actually film critics as well. So
that makes sense.
They had been, you know, kind of like dissecting films for so long. So by the time they finally decided to make these films, you know, they had already, you know, kind of understood the language of cinema in a sense.
So it's kind of like the original Tarantino.
Basically. Yeah. Because, and I'm like, of course, just like I did it with Pasolini, I have to go into kind of like a deep dive of who Truffaut is with this movie. Because, I mean, it's a lot that we have to talk about with this guy. Because, you know, this is semi-autobiographical. Yes. Truffaut never met his real father. And his mom, what's it called, married a man who gave his name to Truffaut. And he was kind of bounced around wet nurses. And then he went to live with his grandmother. And with his grandmother is where he found his passion for music, books, but especially cinema. Because he would go out of classes and go into the cinema and watch movies. Kind of, as is shown in the film, and he was a huge, as you can tell, because he did the book of Hitchcock. He was a huge Hitchcock fan, and I think that's where he got the influence to do the scene of the jail, because there's that notorious story about Hitchcock that one day he had to spend a night in jail because he was acting up with his father, and his father took him to jail, and what's it called? His father told him to go to the jail and take a note, and when the guard opened the note, it said that to put him in jail, and the guard and told him for the guard to tell him that this is what happens when boys act bad, and he spent the night in jail, Hitchcock. So I think that's where also Truffaut got the idea of this, because I don't remember hearing about him actually going to jail.
Yeah, and that jail was kind of ridiculous in the sense that it was like more like a dog kennel.
Pretty much.
You had a cell for one individual person. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, well, this is kind of weird, but I mean, budget back then, maybe, I don't know. Yeah. And but that was a good scene to me, because it just showed you where these parents were or weren't in this child's life. And the scene where it's like, well, you can sign away all your parental rights to the juvenile system. And I'm like, y'all some assholes.
Yeah.
Y'all are the biggest assholes.
Yeah. So like, something that I take away from the watch of this film is that Truffaut really is, I mean, this is what happens when you write an autobiographical character. You know, you're really delving into the persona of who he is. And It's interesting because he's not a teenager like Ettore in Mamma Roma, but in the same way I see those childlike tendencies of Ettore, and I see that Antoine, he's very much looking for attention because at home nobody gives a shit about him, and when it's actually shown that they give a shit about him, it is for to keep secrets away from the father.
Yeah.
And it's not genuine.
Also, the only attention he gets is for when he's being bad.
Yeah, or his friend.
All the other times his dad's either at the racetrack or his mom's doing Lord knows what. It says working, but who knows.
Oh, no, she's about to go with the boss. It's also so who he has to cling on is himself and his little friend, who at the end can't do anything to get him out of there.
Yeah, you just see him throw his hands in there. It's like, I don't know, bro.
I can't, bro. Like, I can't do shit.
Like, I'm sorry, bro. Like, I really just took all the nudie mags I was gonna give you. I don't know what. I was trying to help.
He so this kid, it's in the way I put myself in Truffaut's shoes writing this film, and it's very much expressing his feeling of loneliness, of rejection, of not belonging, and in at times, sadness, real sadness to feel like he's not wanted.
And I feel that comes out in this movie. I think he does a phenomenal job in bringing out that I couldn't blame this kid for anything. No. Like, he didn't know any better. It was different from Mama Roma.
Yeah, because Ettore is at the age where he knows that he's doing wrong.
Yeah. I mean, but this kid's like, you know, I'm just trying to get money so I can hang out with my friends and smoke cigars. Like, and yeah, he smoked cigars and he drank a little. It's like, well, you know, that's France.
Yeah.
Whatever. And yeah. Stealing the typewriter, like, but it's really a cry out for attention. His parents aren't there. When he does get attention, it's usually he's being beat. And yeah. It's like, I can't blame this kid for what he's doing because he doesn't have any good role models to show him the right way other than physical violence. And I can't say that with the Morris Perros because those two knew exactly what they were doing.
Yeah.
And the same with Mama Roma with Ettore. It's just, this film is different. And you said I wouldn't find any redeemable characters in this. Well, there's one. And that's kid. Antoine. It's because Antoine. He still has a chance.
Yeah. Because he has a chance because he's young and he realizes because people don't think that kids are smart, but they really are. Like at Antoine's age, he's a lot more aware of the things that are happening, which is why he decides to take the typewriter back.
Yeah. I mean, he couldn't sell it for one. Which, yeah. You know. But he didn't, like, just leave it on the street there or,
yeah.
Or anything. He actually brought it back to his dad's.
Yeah, he's aware of, you know, now, like, well, you know, I did a bad thing. Why am I going to leave it here? Like, he feels some form of sympathy.
Yeah, some guilt, at least. But, and mm-hmm. that was the difference, I think, between Morris Perros and Mama Roma is none of them felt guilt.
No.
Maybe on Mama Roma when he was dying.
But
that was a little too little too late in my eyes.
Yeah.
But with this film, I think Truffaut does a great job at building a character that does have a chance and that makes the audience feel for him mm-hmm. because he's being done wrong by his whole family, by the education system. Mm-hmm. This kid needs some guidance.
And yeah.
That's really what it says, and you can't blame him for what he does.
You really can't, and you know it's really interesting the way that the father comes because like at first he's like, oh, he's this wisecracking dude. You're like, well, the dad's not too bad, and then you realize like that when the dad says, I gave him my name, I put food on the table. What else do you want? And you're like, that's not being a father.
No, that's about as much as being a sperm donor. So, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. It's just like
even though he was a stepfather, that's basically the same, saying the same.
Yeah,
yeah. You're not in his life. You're a sperm donor.
Yeah, and you know it's to be told like you know now we're gonna have our peace. Like that gets to a kid. It makes them not feel wanted.
Yeah, and he And you brought up the therapist thing. I thought that therapist scene was great.
Oh, yeah.
That he was just telling her, like, he was being honest. He's like, well, do you, and the therapist's like, well, do you lie? He's like, well, yeah, sometimes. I'm like, yeah, everybody lies sometimes. He was like, but it's mostly, you know, for attention.
Yeah.
And it's like, and he knows his mom never wanted him. I mean, that's been told out. She told that whole story that she never wanted him. That
yeah.
She wanted to go for abortion, but his grandmother didn't let him. And I think this movie does something that was very rare, probably in the 50s and 60s, in showing that some people shouldn't have kids.
Yeah.
I mean, and because it's still a weird thing to get across to people is when you don't want children or it's like taboo still. Even today, I mean, it's getting lesser and lesser. So living a child-free life because of how the economy and all that's gone, but it's still taboo because they're like, how could you not want children? It's like, well, I don't.
Yeah. And he's so adjusted to what he's been seeing and, when he's actually sent to the military school, like, he's not prepared for that. He's not. And he feels like he wants to act out because now all of the attention's on him, but he's actually met with real consequences now.
The left hand or right hand roll?
Left. Wham!
Wham! I feel like this kid has been hit. I feel like I watched this kid get hit in the head like 10 times over the course of one movie. So I can't imagine his like life before that. If he's getting hit this many times, mm-hmm. kid's probably got like some brain trauma going on.
I mean, the fucking...
They didn't hit light either.
Yeah, the dad went to school just to give the kid a slap.
Yeah, and right in the head. And every time they just follow Antoine as he goes and sits down somewhere, or he stands and it follows him after every slap, and you're like, this poor kid. Mm-hmm. I mean, he doesn't... Like, you guys can't figure out how to do this in a non-violent kind of form?
Mm-hmm. Well, like, what he says to the officer, the chief of police, we tried consequences, we've tried what's called discipline, and we've tried kindness. And he goes, and we give him freedom, but he still acts out. But it never did you actually try to understand that this kid needs love, and you're not showing him love.
Well, and I think the judge got it. He was like, well, have you been continuously doing this? And they're like, no, we can't leave him alone. Be by himself. Well, there you go. You aren't being parents. You basically just made this tiny person and have let him roam free and try to figure shit out for himself and have shown him no kindness, no love for a continuous matter.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't been unconditionally loving towards him.
And you really haven't taught him morals either. Because, like, he plagiarizes the paper. He,
Now, did he really do that on that one poem where the teacher thought he plagiarized?
Yeah, I think... Well, he got inspiration from the poem he was reading.
Yeah.
But I don't think he really understands what plagiarism is, too.
Well, it wasn't explained. It just, like, go to the principals, and I never want to see you in my class again. It's like... You know, that's... Like, explain... And, yeah, I don't think he understood what exactly he did, because... I didn't. I'm like, because I thought he just wrote that.
Whatever, you know? Was in his mind was the fact that, oh, my mom's going to finally, you know, be good with me. She's going to give me 1,000 of friends. I'm going to be able to play with my friend. And, you know, me and my mom are going to be cool now. So yeah. He really tries really hard. And I don't think he understands what plagiarism is. So when it happens, he's like shocked, like, what the hell, man? I just literally got inspiration to write this. And
I honestly don't think most kids in college nowadays know what plagiarism is.
Yeah, cite your sources, my friend. Please. Yeah.
It'll save your life.
It will save your life, man. It really will. So it's this is masterful directing, masterful cinematography. The music is great too.
Oh, music adds to it.
Yeah.
Like every time the music comes on, it was kind of like The Farewell, it just adds to it.
And I love that sometimes we cut away to a shot of literally Antoine's point of view, like in mm-hmm. front of the cell, in front of the the bars, or
when he's looking at the Eiffel Tower.
Yes. I love those opening shots too of them just taking you to a trip of Paris and showing you like the city, and it's kind of filmed like documentary ish in a way.
Yeah. It really is, and. Because it follows Antoine around in his life and shows you his point of view and what he's going through at that moment in time. And really, it doesn't come to the end until you realize he's not at peace until he's finally seen the ocean.
Yeah, because he's like, and it's, he's finally seen the ocean. And it's funny that the mom's like, can you send him to a school that's near the ocean? And the final scene is him going to the ocean.
Yeah.
And, I love that ending. I think it's a really, like, there's no need of dialogue. There's no need of anything. It's just him running away from everything, from the life that he's living at the moment, and going to this place that is signified as peace and tranquility.
Exactly. And I think that signifies where he's headed.
Yeah, he's kind of making amends with the person that he is. And I think that's also a way of Truffaut saying, like, I've kind of dissected and I've analyzed the childhood I've had, and I've kind of made peace with it.
Yeah, and I mean, had he continued to live with his parents and go through that,
mm-hmm.
he would have turned into what we saw in Mama Roma. He
basically
would have turned into a Amoris Perros.
Yeah, eventually turned into Amoris Perros. Yeah. And I really got to give it up. I can't believe it, man. We're going to go into scores now, right?
Yes.
I can't believe it for the third time. I think this might just be the one month where I give full 10s. I got to go a 10 out of 10 with this one.
I mean, who am I to go against Kurosawa calling it one of the most beautiful films I've ever seen? 10 out of 10.
Slapping a 10 out of 10. Yeah. Are we going to go for the 4-10 next week? Well, you have to find out, man. But yeah, just masterful directing, man. Yeah, I like you said, Brett, I can't believe this is a directorial debut.
Yeah, it's amazing in that sense. It doesn't seem like a directorial debut.
Yes. Yeah, I can't believe it either, man. It's truly an incredible film. I can't believe we finally watched this. And it's more to come about this because what's it called? This isn't the last time we'll talk about French films because we got to keep on making dives into these films. And I really can't wait for us to see more of Truffaut because he has more movies.
I mean, it's always good to go back to the classics because they are the foundational films that help show what we love about The Farewell, Peanut Butter Falcon, and all of those indies.
Yeah, yeah. And the classics are a classic for a reason.
Yep.
Yeah. So next week we'll be going ahead and taking the last final stop in the foreign language film month, and as we go to Mexico to speak on the film by Guillermo del Toro, The Devil's Backbone. Or
do you find it weird that I was the one to choose the Mexican film?
Yeah, I found it weird, but yeah. But I know you've been trying to find a way to include Guillermo at some point, right?
Yeah, I mean, because I've been, I forget what, oh, Pan's Labyrinth was one I was, but yeah. I think Devil's Backbone is just an amazing film that doesn't get talked about enough.
I'm sorry, I got the setting wrong. It's actually in Spain, so we're not traveling too far. We're traveling.
Yeah, it's directed by
Mex. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's set in Spain, so we're traveling a little bit southwest, southeast. Southwest to Spain. But yes, I can't wait for next week. It's going to be a fun week, and it's going to be a fun week to talk about this film. I have my trilogy of Guillermo del Toro box set here, and I have the next one I need to watch is Devil's Backbone, so it fell out in a good place. So I'm really excited.
Have you not seen this yet?
Huh?
Have you not seen this yet?
Oh, I've seen The Devil's Backbone.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, I'm like, what the fuck?
No. The only one I had not seen was Kronos.
Kronos. I haven't seen Kronos yet.
Yeah, I watched Kronos for the first time. I really liked it, but this one was the one I had not watched. This is the one that I had watched, and of course, who hasn't watched Penn's Labyrinth?
So, I mean, Roger Ebert gave it a 3 out of 4.
Very true. What, Penn's Labyrinth?
No, Devil's Backbone.
Devil's Backbone, okay. So, with that being said, it's been a wonderful time here, man. We'll go ahead and go into some housekeeping, right?
See.
All right, shout out to the associate producers, Sarah and Cassie. Thank you so much for being associate producers of the podcast. You guys are wonderful people. Excuse me, I want to burp into the microphone. You can also help us by congratulating the executive producers of the podcast, and that is Grayson Barker, who you can follow on Instagram at GraysonBarker98 and on Twitter at WarlordHitman98. And then Shane, how about him, Brad?
You can follow our friend Shane at twitch.tv/SWRKK or his Twitter at SWRKK Twitch.
Yep. So if you liked the episode, you know you got to go and rate and review it on your podcast app of choice. It really does help the feed grow. Also, make sure that you guys follow the Nerdcore on Twitter at the Nerdcore _ Instagram at the Nerdcore, Facebook page, the Nerdcore Pods. Also, follow join the Facebook group, the official Nerdcore group, the Nerdverse. Go and do that. And also, check out the Patreon. Yeah, you know what's the best way to celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month, or how I like to call it, Latino Heritage Month? It's by helping out Latino-run businesses, companies, or what's it called, Latinos chasing their dreams. And right here, you have a Latino who's trying to chase his dream. And I really want to achieve my dream right now of reaching 10 Patreon supporters. So go to the Patreon at patreon.com/nerdcore and join the Patreon. $1 tier, that's all you got to do, honestly. And we can get to our first goal, and we can launch our comic book club. So go and help out Latino on Latino Heritage Month. So it's going to be a good time here, and we'll see you.
Bro, I think you should bring up a written review that just popped up onto the site.
Yes, we are celebrating Foreign Language Film Month, not just in audio format, but in written format. So my brother Luis, or how I call him Güero, is finally put up his first review of his first review ever, first article ever on the, what's it called, thenerdcore.com. He did a review of Elisa and Marcela. I think that's the title of it, Elisa and Marcela. And it's a black and white Spanish film that is about lesbians in the 1900s. And
can I just read a quote?
Yeah.
Just a short quote from,
yeah,
because it made me laugh. Anyway, I ended up deciding to watch Elisa and Marcela, a black and white film about the romance of two young women set in the turn of the 20th century Northwest Spain. The movie's plot intrigued me a lot. Having been raised by the public education system in Texas, I was taught that lesbians didn't come into existence until the 1990s when Ellen DeGeneres invented them.
Yeah, I forgot to tell you that joke when he told it to me, when I told him about what he was gonna, when he told me what he was going to watch it. And he said, so I expect this to be a revisionist movie since, yeah, basically Ellen DeGeneres created lesbians.
I've read part of this, but when I got to that, I lost it.
You lost it.
I lost it.
Yeah. So that's not the only article he'll be writing this month. At the end of the month, he'll be writing a piece on foreign language movies. It's just any topic he wants to really talk about. I know he does have an interesting topic he'd like to talk about from Y Tu Mamá También, and the way that Cuarón really analyzes. And that he makes poverty in Mexico a backdrop to the film. But, you know, he's going to be the one to make that decision whatever he wants to talk about for the end of the month. But go and read that review. It's pretty good. And my brother's a pretty damn good writer. And just go and check it out, because it's honestly a pretty damn good review. So, nerdcore.com, just go and it'll take you directly to that new review that's up. That's it, right? We didn't put up anything newish, right?
What do you mean?
No, I mean, like, if we put a new review up, but...
The only reviews we got after your brother's is your Hustlers
review. Yeah, I already talked about that, yeah.
And then my review of Jason Inman's Super Soldier.
Yeah, which you already talked about too, right?
Yes.
Cool, so go and do that, and what's it called? I actually never... talk about this on the podcast, but if you guys remember, we have a Teespring account. We have a Teespring store. So you guys, if you want merch, it's there.
You can buy my face on a sweatshirt.
I was about to say, I recommend Brad's hoodie, but if you can't buy that hoodie right now, I do recommend the Tulane Lovers shirt. That's one that I'm trying to pick up soon. So what's it called? You guys go and check that out at Teespring. Just search up the Nerdcore and we'll be there. So I think that's it, right?
I mean, I kind of like that movie. Had a fucking script shirt.
Oh, me too. I it's a little bit too. It's a little bit mean, but you know, it's a funny quote that you said. So you know.
I mean, it's the Meg. Who cares?
Yeah. Well, go and check it out. So, thank you for listening, guys, and we'll see you. Well, I won't see you tomorrow, but you'll get to listen to Brad tomorrow on Unstructured, hopefully.
And yes, I've had a topic for 2 weeks, guys. It's just, I haven't had time to record it. My relatives have finally left the premises for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So you will be getting something on Taco Tuesday.
Yes, sir. In celebration of Mexican Independence Day, I guess.
It somehow wound up like that. But I hope I've made it up by doing quite a few reviews on the site.
Yeah.
So I hope I kind of made up this missing of unstructured episodes, because I know y'all have been dying for that, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, we're getting back into the swing of things. So, what's it called? Thank you guys for listening. You can listen to me on Thursday. I'm going to be doing the, because remember, I'm moving to Thursdays for Impaired Files to take over the slot that, because ladies have gone bi-weekly, so I'm taking over the spot. I've always been bi-weekly. So, well, not always. I was monthly at one point, but yeah. Go and check out. I talked to Amanda Digman this time. So, go and check out that awesome interview. But with that being said, it's been a wonderful time talking to you all. And, au revoir, nerds! Send them into the podcast void, Brad.
Neraro, thank you for being host as always. Thank you to all our listeners out there, all our Patreon supporters. We truly appreciate each and every one of you. And I guess in the next episode, we review Bill Hader being fucking awesome. Young Yoda out.
Au revoir, Shosana!